So we've been plowing through a series in agape and protecting our agape. Why do we protect our agape? First, he says that we need to live this life of agape. Agape is a form of love. If you've not been here, I just want to tell you, agape is a form of love, and this is selfless love. He is the supreme example. Yeshua is the supreme example of selfless love. He came here and he died for a whole world that they would have the chance to know him and to call on him. This is a very big thing. And he was set tone for this. He died for a world that really rejected him. It's awful. But he is our example of the selfless love. And as we come to know him, he gives us the ability to walk out a selfless love. It's quite a journey. It's an act of a will. It's not so much a feely thing. You know, there's friendship love. You know, you feel good when you're with your best friends, or you feel good when you're with your spouse. You know, that's maybe a romantic love also. So a friendship love and a romantic love. You feel a certain affection towards other loved ones in your life, children or relatives or, you know, whomever. That there's something about this agape love that only believers can receive and only believers can walk out. But again, there's a big element of it is choice. And one of the things that we know from our agape love, and we went through this in the first week, is that agape love is one of our great indicators to prove to us that we are truly in good standing with the Lord. And the scriptures are very clear in this. So this is one of the reasons we protect it. First, he says to do it. We live a selfless life for him and to honor him. Like he was selfless, we live selflessly. And second, we live selflessly to protect our walk with him. It's our agape is almost like a gauge. If we feel our selfless love drying up, it's kind of a check light. It's like a check engine light in a car. It's a check light for us to say, hey, hold on a second. If we're shriveling up our caring for other people, what's going on? What's wrong? What's not right? So it's a way to keep a sensitivity to our walk with him. So this week and last week, we spoke to doubt. Doubt can quench some of our selfless love. It's very difficult to have questions about the Lord. Sometimes it can be difficult to have questions about the Lord and still want to live selflessly for the Lord. But how do we take on those questions? How do we process? Everybody, I think every great patriarch in the scriptures, in some way, shape, or form, had a time in their life where they go, well, God, where are you? You know, we hear David speaking about it. Where are you, Lord, in the hard times? But no matter what, I'll follow you. And that's what we processed a bit the other week when we talked about doubt. So today I would like to speak to something else that can really quench our agape. Here's our agape, this selfless love. And there's something that smack dab punches selfless love right in the face. But let me set the tone for it first before I tell you what it is. By the way, you know, most Bibles have this called the Book of Hebrews, this reference coming from the Book of Hebrews. But there's one translation out there, and I really like it. They call it the Book of Messianic Jews, because that's who Paul was writing to, the Messianic believers, the Jewish believers. And that's a really good translation. I just wanted to put that in there because it's a fresh look on something that if you've looked at the word Hebrews for a long time, it's a good perspective on an old look. So Hebrews 10, verse 24, let us consider how to stir up one another, talking to believers. How do we stir each other up for love? This kind of love specifically is agape. So, and good deeds. I want to help provoke today a deep stirring for something that will squanch our agape. And I don't know that all of you have a challenge with this. Maybe you will at some point in your life. But I do believe that most of you in the room have a challenge with this thing, this squancher of agape. I'd like to speak about grudges. I mean, grudges. You know what I'm talking about? The kind of grudges that you've got them inside. Maybe you have a grudge right now with somebody, and maybe it's for something really, really terrible that they did to you. I mean, really heinous, really horrible. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. Maybe somebody just cut you off and you're really mad on your way to service today. I mean, they really cut you off and you really, but I mean, grudges. I'm talking the real grudges. There's a lady who I met. Some of you had the chance to, I don't know. Maybe some of you have met her in here. Marianne, maybe you met her. Her name is Rose Price. She was a Holocaust camp survivor. And she was, as a child, she was taken. I believe she was 6 years old. She had a twin sister. And her story is a really interesting story. Now, she's an example of a grudge bearer, to a point anyway. When she was taken to the camps, her and her six-year-old twin sister were, their first camp they were put in was with all children, and it was kitty-cornered to a church. And people walking to church would throw rocks through the fence at the kids on their way to and from the church service. So right away, you know, she's six. You know, what do you know when you're six? It's her and her sister just in this camp, you know. So she would watch the kids go into a church and come out of a church. Well, why do you think she felt about churches? You know, not so great. Yeah. And this went on for a while, and they transferred it to another camp, and then to another camp, and then to another camp. Eventually, she was at a camp with a doctor. You may have heard of Mengele. He would perform operations and surgeries on, and he liked children. He liked twins because he could see if he operated on one, but not the other, he could compare post-operation of what things are going on. And he would do these experiments. And Rose and her sister were put in that camp for those types of things. So after the war, Rose survived. And somewhere along the line, years later, she gave her life to the Lord. She recognized that Yeshua is the Messiah. And she had to deal with grudges. And we can imagine why. She saw some of the very, very worst of the worst. And in order to get to that place of accepting Yeshua, she had to deal with the whole thing with the church and all those children. And she had to deal with, you know, how can there be a God in a world like this, you know? But she did. She dealt with it, but yet she had this grudge. And one day years later, and this was in the 70s, so, you know, at least 30 years had gone by, she was invited to speak in a conference in Germany. And it would be her first time back since the war ended. Should I do it? Should I do it? Should I do it? And she just hated the idea of going. She just hated it. And she decided to go. She really thought it would be the right thing to go. And she, and it was a great big, and she talked to, she described it as an arena kind of event, you know, where they're sitting low and there's all these elevated seats and a giant sports arena and all kinds of healing things that were going on. And she was one of the speakers at this event. So she does her piece and, you know, everything goes on at the event. And afterward, this man runs up to her and he said, I was in one of those camps that you talked about. I was a Nazi guard. Good. You know, what do you say to that? He was there when she was there, and he guarded her inside of the camp, you know, to stay inside the camp. And he said, I want you to forgive me. And of course, she just left. She didn't even. You know, she walked away. So the next day she was going to the airport to fly home, and she's walking down the aisle. This is before metal detectors. So here's this man yelling. He's an old man at this point, and he's yelling and he's trying to catch up to her. And she describes this mental moment that she had where she's walking down this long hallway, and she knows this man is coming behind her, and she's saying, God, what's your problem? You want me to talk to this guy? You couldn't want me to talk to this guy. What? And so she's got this battle that's going on. For her, I think it seemed like a lot longer than it really was. But there was something, in order to go to Germany, something, the Lord had to deal with something inside of her just to go to Germany. And when she turned around and she faced that man, because she did stop and she faced him, and she waited for him to catch up, And she's watching all of this happen. The Lord did something else inside of her. And she describes that she couldn't put words to it. But the Lord doesn't always do things that we can put words to. So when he catches up to her, he goes on his knees. He puts his cane down and he goes on his knees. And he said, won't you forgive me? She's got this big decision. So this morning, I'd like to speak about grudges. How far do we go with grudges? And you might have a grudge on something very, very serious in your life. And I don't want to make light of that serious thing at all. I recognize that some of you have gone through some things that are really, really bad. For example, Bears fans. No. Really, some of you have gone through terrible things. Rose Price went through terrible things. But we can't let a grudge get in the way of our agape. At some point, we have to pick at it. At some point, we have to start to address it. And I want to speak a little bit about this morning. Now, Rose went forward. She put her hand on him. And she said, I forgive you. It had changed the rest of her life. She started viewing everything back then in a very different lens. She still had the issues. There's still ramifications for what she went through. You know that she had to process, but she spent the rest of her life viewing things from a very different lens. She talked about how things just realigned, how she felt about people, how she felt about everything. All kinds of things changed because of that moment where she said, "I forgive you." Now he asked her and she forgave. She dealt with a grudge. Other people in the Bible, and I know, I just want to say this again, I recognize here that there are some long-standing grudges. And that's what I want to speak to. I want to provoke you to dealing with that for the sake of agape. Some biblical examples. We did this last week in looking at doubts or questions about the Lord. It's okay to acknowledge that you have a grudge. People in the Bible have grudges. Joab against Abner. Joab was the captain of the guard, so does, I forget his proper title, with David. But he led the fighting forces, and Abner was on Saul's side. They were a split kingdom, and Abner decided that he wanted to bring the kingdoms together, so he met with David. David, they brokered kind of a peace treaty. Well, the problem was, Abner, when they were in split kingdoms, Abner had killed Joab's brother. So for years later, Joab, when he finds out that David's working with Abner, Joab decides he's going to get his revenge, and he does. He makes up a story, and ultimately he stabs Abner, and he delayed peace between two countries, or the split Israel. He delayed peace, his grudge. He handled his grudge over the priority of the nation. That grudge really got in there. Terrible. We would say that's a form of family comes first. Have you ever heard that before? Family comes first, even at the cost of the nation. The nation! Esau against Jacob. You know, these two brothers, Esau's first, and then Jacob, with his mom, helps him trick Esau out of his birthright and his blessing. And he has this, it's a crazy story of this rivalry between the two brothers. Esau just basically loses it all. And his own mom, I mean, think about it. If you're Esau and you find out that your mom conspired against you with your brother, that's nuts. But there are people I know who deal with family favoritism on a regular basis. You go back, you support your parents, you do everything you can do, and you know you're not their favorite. I know for a fact several people that I've come across who have long-term grudges because of this. Or maybe trickery in the family. This is one of the most common things and you've heard about this. Maybe you've been around this. People will have someone in their family will pass away, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, and they'll leave something behind. I don't mean like millions and millions. It could be like a TV set. And the heirs start to fight over it. You know what I mean? Who's going to get that TV set? I know it works, except for Channel 9. I won't use Channel 9, but the rest of it works. I'm going to get that TV set. So they go back. Somebody tries to figure out how to get that TV set to the point where the siblings or the heirs stop talking to each other over a TV set. You know what I mean? I've heard of these things. Who cares about a TV set? They wanted me to have it. It's a TV. But they get a grudge. The person who doesn't get it has a grudge. It's very common. These family things, it's brutal. Another one on our list, the descendants of Esau, the Edomites, and Jacob, and his descendants are Israel. So this is a generational grudge. This is amazing. Later, Esau and Jacob reconciled. They had a coming together. But for some reason, the people in their family thought they should continue the grudge. I don't get it. The two guys have this coming together moment, but their descendants later, the Esau's descendants and Israel, Jacob's descendants, they have this grudge. And at one point, Israel gets captured, they get taken over, and they get marched off into Babylon. And the Edomites celebrate. Yeah, they're gone. You know, we hate Jacob's children. They didn't say that like that, but they did celebrate. And in Obadiah, we see they're prophetically the Lord saying, "You're going to get it now. Why would you celebrate against your family?" Why would you do that? Generational grudges are horrible. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because Grandma Mabel didn't like them, you can't like them. Because your parent was wronged, you can never like that person. I had a situation, my wife and I, this was a strange thing. Just a couple months ago, one of my daughters called me and said, "Hey, I ran into somebody that doesn't like you." It was literally a 35-year grudge. He was now introducing to our daughter. I thought, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. I have no grudge. It was only a grudge on their half. So they're carrying on a generational grudge. It's like we got the Hatfield-McCoys thing going on here. And some of you have this, or you've been around this. Generational stuff is horrible. By the way, I found the guy a few weeks after that, and I walked up to him. It was a great scene. I said, "You know, I don't have a problem with you. Why would you tell my daughter that? She doesn't even know who you are. I don't have a problem with you. My wife doesn't have a problem with you. We would pray for blessings in your life. You press in with God." He was a believer. "You press in with God, and I'll press in with God. And if we see each other, I'll say hello. What's the big deal?" I don't understand this generational stuff, do you? But it's there and it's real. Herodias against John the Immerser. Here's a woman. She's married to Herod. And it's the second wife of Herod Antipas. And there's all these different Herods. And John the Immerser is, some churches call him John the Baptist. And at one point, John the Immerser had told, said to Herod, you can't marry this woman because she was married to your brother. And that's against the law, against Torah. You can't marry your brother's wife in this way. But they did anyway. Well, Herodias was a scorned woman. She felt, you know, whatever she, I don't know if it's a romantic thing, and she thought John was trying to squanch the romantic thing, or if it was a status thing. We don't know. The Bible is not clear. But we know that she held a grudge against John, having said this to her new husband. They got married anyway, and she held a grudge against him for this. So she waited, and she waited, and she waited, and she waited. And ultimately, she got her daughter. It was her daughter's birthday, who had the same name, Herodias herself. And her dad said, "What would you like for your birthday?" And the mom said, "Tell him you want John's head." After all these years, she holds a grudge. Here's a funny thing about revenge, by the way. There's a study done in Amsterdam, and they looked at 2,000 people who committed revenge, 18 to 69, the wide range. And the average turnaround time for revenge, let me write this down, 14% do it immediately. I don't know what immediate revenge looks like, but they do that. 36%, it took a week for them to do revenge. 23%, 1 to 4 weeks to do their revenge. So they brooded for maybe a month. 21% took up to a year. I'm going to get them. 21% took up to a year. And the types of revenge that they did, they intentionally cheated on their spouse. There's a revenge. Damaging cars, spreading lies, sharing secrets, trying to get them fired. Just old school, down and dirty. Those are the most common revenges, by the way. The common revenges. The number one most common revenge was an affair. I'm going to teach my spouse. I'm really going to stick it to him by being with somebody else. Terrible. So I'm going to say Herodias and John, I'm going to call that a romantic grudge. I don't know if it's really the right word, but you know what I mean. And Saul against David, this was a career grudge. This was career. So Saul is king, and he's got this issue with David. And we see in this passage that the people, David would go by and they would say, Saul kills hundreds or thousands, David kills tens of thousands. And they started to view David more successful in battle. He was really known amongst the people for his fighting prowess. Every time he fought, he was more successful even than the other generals in Israel, the other leaders in Israel at the time. And Saul had problems with it. He became very jealous for his reputation. He wanted to be the guy. So this is a career thing. Some of you have had your careers upended, and you know somebody who's had their career upended, and it's very easy to let a grudge get in there. It's very easy to let a grudge get in there because of what somebody did to your career. Maybe they spread a false thing. Maybe they took credit for work. Maybe they took credit for a lot of work. Maybe they hopped on a situation that was yours that they shouldn't have hopped into. It doesn't matter. Grudges can occur. And I've known a lot of people who have had a grudge occur because of something that happened at a job, even a long time ago. Heard a story in South Dakota in 2012 of a man that had something happen in high school. So he waited till he was 73 years old to commit revenge. You got that? High school, let's say he's 18, to 73 years old. He went to the guy's house. What happened was this guy was an athlete, and the guy who committed had the grudge. He committed revenge after all these years because this athlete way back then put a jock strap on his face. Terrible. So he waited till he's 73 and he went to his house, rang the doorbell, and the doer of the prank opened the door, but the guy shot him. Grudges! Do you ever have a grudge? You don't have to answer this, but do you ever have a grudge that you have it's like a little garden in your brain? Every now and then you go up there and you fertilize it, you water it. Oh, I really someday I'm just going to stick it to him. I'm going to stick it to him. You know what I'm talking about? It's like it almost feels cathartic to go and have this moment in a brain where you can get somebody back. And you water that grudge and you pick away the weeds around it. You help that grudge thrive. So here's the deal. Grudges really mess us up. If somebody bears a grudge, they do damage to themselves. And I know it feels so good to think that there'll be, you could do something with the grudge or handle the grudge, but holding the grudge messes us up on different layers. There's different things that occur. For example, be angry and do not sin. Don't let the sun go down in your anger. And don't give the devil an opportunity. For some reason, when we hold on to a grudge, we allow the devil to get into our thinking. And we literally shortchange ourselves, our own ability to draw close to the Lord. We circumvent pieces of our life. We don't draw close to the Lord in certain pieces of our life. And that gives the devil a foothold. If we go to sleep with any kind of grudge at all, we're making it okay for the devil to work on our thinking. That's not a small statement, by the way. Anytime we give the devil any latitude in our life, we can end up with a big, big problem. Do not grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, so that you may not be judged. That word grumble literally translates to, you ready? Grudge. Do not grudge against. So we would say sometimes people would use the expression gossip, but what's the fuel behind the gossip? It's the grudge. Don't grudge against somebody, brothers and sisters, so that you will not be judged in this way. Do you know, if we have a grievance against somebody that we hold on to, this grudge, we will be judged. I do not want to have to explain the Lord why I had a grudge, a long-term grudge against somebody. I got other problems. Let that not be one of them. Amen? Forgiving one another, or if somebody asks you for forgiveness, forgive one another as the Lord has forgiven you. So you also must forgive. Do you see that our forgiveness from the Lord is connected with how we treat other people in forgiveness? We're forgiven. If we're asked to be forgiven, we really have to forgive. It's not an option. If we're not asked, we revert to the other two things on the list, and we got to watch out for our own self anyway. We have to let go of grudges. We can't hold on to them. We can't foster them. We can't water them in our little mental garden. We have to let them go. We can't hold on to them. There are some of you in the room right now, you know the grudge in your mind. Don't look those daggers at me. You're not looking them. One thing about grudge, I just want to give you a sense of parameters here. A grudge isn't necessarily a full reconciliation. Sometimes the big step is just letting it go. It doesn't mean that you're going to go bowling with them. You who have suffered serious hurt, just about letting it go. When Rose Price said she forgave that man who was kneeling in the hallway at the airport in front of her, they didn't get together after that. That was just that moment. But there is a price to letting it go. You have to want to let it go. I'm going to read the verse, but I'm going to tell you the crux of this before I read it. Let God have his own vengeance. Repay no one evil for evil. Give thought to what is good in the eyes of all people. That's our focus. What's good? If possible, so far as it depends on you, live in shalom with all people. Never take your own revenge, loved ones, but give room for God's wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay. And he quotes the law there, says Adonai. Rather, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. And then it launches in this whole thing. If you got a problem with somebody, don't do bad things. Don't get them back. Do good things. If they're hungry, your enemy, go give them food. If they need something, go give it to them. It's a total flip. That's what it is to follow Yeshua. It's a total flip. Talk about being light in the world. We really stand out when we're kind to people who are not kind to us. Let God have revenge. I got to tell you, and I think you know this, when you see revenge happen in front of you, it can feel wonderful. Did you ever see somebody get pulled over in front of you, right? It can feel great. You get somebody who's hassling you and you're a kid in school, you're hassling you, saying whatever, and all of a sudden the teacher hears it. There's something about justice that happens in front of our eyeballs. It's like a nice warm blanket. Feels awesome. And I think a lot of times I'll just speak for myself. I won't speak for you. A lot of times when I know that justice can be done in front of me, I'll think, well, why can't I just get that person back so there is justice? You ever feel like that? It feels so good to get it. So we war against ourselves. We are not supposed to bring the justice on them. We have to let the Lord do it. And the Lord does it so much better. I've had a couple of times in my life I've watched the Lord bring justice. One time was my last boss at my old corporate job. He was a fine fellow, but he just never listened to me. And he would get frustrated with me. And I would tell him, there's a whole story to it. Trust me, it's a whole story to it. So after I left the company, they let him go, which is crazy. I felt so liberated. I had nothing to do with it. I just worked so hard for him. I worked as hard as I could possibly work for any human. I did work for him. And it was so frustrating. I would go 6 weeks and I wouldn't even see him or talk to him. No emails, nothing. And at the end of the 6 weeks, he would say, well, what have you been doing this whole time? Making you look good, I guess. You know what I mean? But when I left, they saw they let him go. It was just nuts. I look at that and I really believe God was in it. I mean, I can't even explain why it would take too long. Another thing I saw, this is just a quick thing about me. I was a kid and in high school, I think I was in my junior year, so maybe I'm 16 or 17, and there was another kid who wanted to fight me, and I didn't understand why. And I just kind of avoided him for a while because I didn't want to fight him. And finally, it got really bad, and I remember waking up one morning saying, well, Lord, I don't want to fight this guy. I don't really know what to do because now he's starting to look for me, Lord. I don't know what to do. And I was very bothered by this. And I went to school and I sat down in homeroom. And he looked at me. This guy, it turns out he's in my homeroom and he hadn't been there for a while. But he shows up in my homeroom and he said, well, you know, I think we're going to fight today. Long story short, he said, we're going to fight today. Out of nowhere, it was the strangest thing. On this side of me, this girl, she hears it. And she looked at him and she looked at me. And she started to reach inside of her purse. Some of you are going to understand what I'm saying. She started to pull out a bunch of rings. She started to put rings on all of her fingers. How many of you know what that means? So at my school, the most dangerous fight there was back then was against a group of girls. And you laugh because you didn't go to my school. My high school was a thug school. Sometimes people, you know, I like to say I'm a survivor, not a graduate, but a survivor. So when I saw her putting her rings in her fingers, I knew what that meant. And she got a real serious look in her face, and she said, she called me James. James, you leave him to me. He heard it too. And he sees the rings going on her fingers. He gets real pale. Because that's who you did not want to mess with in my school, because they never fought alone. It was very violent and very dangerous, and there were a lot of bad hurts. A lot of bad things happened in those fights. So I'm watching her get ready, and I'm watching him get pale, and I'm doing one of these. And the bell rang. Really, it's like a scene from a movie. The bell rang. And she said, James, you go on to your next class now. Thanks, Stephanie. So I went to my next class. He never talked to me again. She took care of business. I'm not kidding you. It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Let God bring his vengeance. I've got a lot of things in my life that I didn't see vengeance on. You have them too. David had them. Asaph had them. All kinds of people through scriptures have them. Where are you, God? Why aren't you doing this? Why haven't you throttled them? Why didn't you make their feet fall off? Why didn't you make birds fly over them? Why do they still not have an itching problem? Why? Where is the justice? Why can't they get what's coming? You know what I'm talking about, some of you. It's not fair. It's not right. Let him do what he thinks is best, because that's always is what's best. We just don't know what it's going to look like, but you have to decide if you've got a grudge. You have to decide now, right now. Don't go home and decide. This is not a home decision. Do you want to hold on to that grudge? Can you let it go with him? Can you say, God, your justice is always the right justice? If you need time to think about this answer, you have a different issue with the Lord. You don't need time to think if you want to let God handle it. If you have a problem, let it go. Let him handle it. Don't wait for them to apologize. Just let it go. So here's how you do it. Here's how you let it go. And man, oh man, oh man, I know it's much harder than what I'm going to say. But here's how you let it go. First, you have to want to do that. You have to trust that the Lord is very smart. You have to trust that the Lord actually has an answer, that he's working his own plan that's a lot better than our plan. So you have to let it go that way. Just, Lord, I'm letting it go. I'm letting it go, God. It's going to be up to you. Then you start to pray. Here's a verse, and I want to point this out in the verse. You'll see what I mean in a minute. Don't worry about the wicked or envy those who do wrong, for like grass, they will soon fade away. Well, there's a picture. Like spring flowers, they soon wither. Trust in the Lord and do good. Then you will live safely in the land and prosper. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you your heart's desires. So here we went through this passage in Psalm. I put some extra ones under there if you want to apply this, what I'm going to say, these other passages. Sometimes if you don't know how to pray for somebody, this is how we start. We let go, and then we start to pray for them. Just pray for them. And if you don't know how to pray for somebody that's done something so egregious, pray through books in the Bible. Find the chapters in Psalm and say and put that person's name there. Lord, I know they're an enemy. I viewed them as an enemy, and I know you don't want me to view them as an enemy. And I'm trying to do right in my land, in my life, and this place that you've put me in my life with the people around in my life and the things happening in my life. But I really need your help with this person. Help them be successful in their land. Help them never do wrong again. Help them find you. Help them see who you are. Help them see the wrong that they've done. And as you start with that, sometimes it may take a while, but as you start praying for that, you'll be able to pray for other things for them. But start with some scriptures. If you don't know how to start with some scriptures. If you do know how to start, then start in prayer. Pray for their family. Pray for success financially. Pray that they know the Lord. Pray that their life is mean something before the Lord, that it's honorable to His testimony. But pray for those things. Sometimes when I say let go of a grudge, it doesn't mean that you have to call the person and deal with them. Some grudges are so bad, or the cause is so bad, that's the last thing you want to do. But at some point, we have to break through the grudge. Praying for them is the most wonderful thing I know of to do that. There's not a long list of things to do after that. If we can let go and we step into prayer, truly praying for them will be all right. I had one grudge once. It was really a doozy for me to get over. I was driving down the road. My wife and I were dating at the time, and I'm driving it. I dropped her off, and it's late at night and not a lot of cars in the road. And this grudge popped in my mind. I had my little watering can, you know, my mental watering can, and I'm going to. But I decided to start to pray for this grudge. And man, oh man, oh man, it was the first time I think I'd ever prayed for the grudge. And it really did re-trajectorize, put in a new trajectory, my way of thinking about the grudge. So it was a great car ride home. The problem was I had to continue to pray like that. I had to remember to do it in my quiet times with him. And I did. So Lord, I'm in my quiet time. And I don't want to keep praying about this. I don't want to talk about this anymore because I'm still mad at my grudge, you know? But as I made intention to leave my grudge behind and I kind of had that breakthrough driving, it made things really easy over time to get to where I needed to. Praise God, I don't have that grudge anymore. I got different grudges. No. Grudges, they just take time. Don't be mad if you have a grudge and it takes you some time to process it. But lean into the Lord for processing it. Pray about it. That's the one thing I know. You can fast about it too, but that's the one thing I know to process a grudge. You know, there's psychologists and psychiatrists. There's mental health experts who can help process a grudge to putting into a safe place in life. The Lord goes beyond that. The Lord heals hearts. How would Rose Price have ever been able to have forgiven that Nazi? The Lord can heal a heart, not just put it into a safe bucket. He can take a grudge, break it, and make all things good. But it does take intentionality on your part, and it does take intentional prayer. Don't quit. Amen? Hang in there in the grudges. Letting them go, I mean. Please stand up. Lord God, you don't like when we have grudges. Your word is clear. There's problems for us, and it's just not good for us to have a grudge. Lord, so often when we have problems, we want you to crush them, crush those people that bring those problems to us. We want to see revenge, Lord. But here this morning, people who are going through, I believe in this room, Lord, there's people saying, yes, Lord, I will let go of my grudges. I will trust your revenge, your vengeance. Help them, Lord. Help us all as we're processing and letting go of old hurts, old resentments. I pray for healing so that we can be more effective in our agape, healing so that we can be more effective being your children. You, Lord, have gone through so much negative, yet you hold no grudge. Help us take that on ourselves. Thank you for this, God. L'shem Yeshua. Amen. Yevarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha. Ye'er Adonai panav aliyecha v'yunecha. Yisei Adonai panav aliyecha v'yaseim lacha. Shalom. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. Be blessed. One quick announcement. It's 11:42, so at 12 o'clock upstairs in the old chapel, we're starting at 12 hard. So if you're late, you're going to miss all the good stuff. There's schmooze everywhere. There's some prayers here. They'll have land.